Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 5th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You are a busy boy.
Yes.
You've got lots to do.
Yeah, you know, out here in Vegas for 3 weeks, and I'm like, how am I going to pass the time? Which I know sounds kind of funny to people, that, but it's a long time to be away from home, right?
And, yeah.
In one place. But it's really flying by, and then the wife gets out here Saturday, and it'll go quick then, and then I'll be home, so...
Still, I always think of Vegas as a four-day town. I mean, you get in, you kind of relax a little, maybe you gamble a little, and you got a day where you go everything you want to do, you got another day where you recover from the day you want to do, then you go home. That's how I think of Vegas, and you're there for a long time, so I'm sure it's not easy.
Yeah, I'm making the most of it, but yeah, you're right. Playing takes a lot out of you. So, you know, I played three tournaments this week and the one last week, of course. And if you go deep in that, that's an all-day commitment.
Yeah.
And they're two-day tournaments. So that kind of eats up the time pretty quickly. But anyhow, to remind everybody, we're out here at the Ante Up Poker Tour event at the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas downtown. Having a great time. Series is going phenomenally. You know, we had these 100K guarantee events every Saturday and Sunday, and the first couple were while Colossus was going on, and the entire room was filled both days solid, and had more than 660 players in those. So they were just ecstatic with the numbers there. The players loved the structures and the money, and it turned out to be exactly what was designed, a good place for people to come either before or after they played their play in the Colossus.
Wow.
Tons of familiar faces out here. You know, a bunch of people from our cruises were out here. Some other folks that I met at other Ante Up Poker Tour events. Podcast fans. Lauren Finkelstein came down after he actually cashed in Colossus. Congratulations.
Nice.
And then came down to hang out a little bit. We went to Benihana. Love it. And then Todd Falstead, one of our pilots that listened to us, he keeps missing me at all events. He made a special effort this time to come over and say hi to me in the middle of a tournament, so I get to meet him as well, too. And a couple other folks from the podcast said, you know, hey, I love the show, and shook her hand, and that was great. So it's funny, because we always talk about going on the cruises or the charity event in Daytona, right, as our kind of homecoming thing, and now this is feeling a lot like it.
Cool.
But besides the, you know, we're running two events a day, two to three events a day, depending on the days. And but then at night, they added 7 p.m. Second chance tournaments, which aren't official on the official schedule. But it's a good thing to do at night if you bust out of the other events. And they're hitting close to 300 players as well, too, with, you know, upwards of 6 to 7K on top for $100 buy-in.
Jeez, that's awesome.
So, yeah, a lot of good poker going on here, and, you know, it's kind of funny, too. I was talking to one of our ambassadors and a couple other players during Colossus, you know, which happened last weekend. This town was jammed with poker players. You know, I had people telling me it was hard for them to find hotel rooms, and the hotel rooms they could find were outrageously expensive. Lines of wait list of 40-some long, getting cash games to places. And surprisingly, a lot of tournaments people got shut out in. There just wasn't capacity.
Jeez.
So, yeah, we'll talk more about the Colossus a little later, but it certainly had an effect on, from a tourism standpoint, you know, the Las Vegas Tourism and Convention Bureau has to be ecstatic. that they tried this Colossus. But yeah, it's been busy out here at the in Vegas in the Antiup Tour event. I wish I had more exciting news to tell you about my play, but played three events this week and flamed out in all of them. Oh. Sorry, bud.
Ah. Oh.
Not even pretending to bring home 50% of my winnings to you.
It's okay, though. It's, you know, you'll get it back.
And I gotta say, my new least favorite hand, pocket eights.
Oh, no.
Which probably should have been my least favorite hand to begin with, you know, because I'm a Floridian and I really have no interest in snowmen ever. But two of these three tournaments, I went out with pocket eights.
Oh.
I didn't even realize that this morning when I woke up and I'm like, stupid eights. In the muck from now on.
Hate those dog
balls. But... but the first event I played this week, I'm not going to go through all everything. I, you know, I played a horse event and did all right. That one I got knocked out. I had a 7 card on 5th Street on Raz.
Yeah.
And guy pipped a 6 on the end. Knocked me out. So, you know, I felt like I played well in all these. I didn't make any bad moves. I just, you know, unlucky. But, and then no limit last night, pocket eights, ran into pocket kings. I can't do much with that. But the first event of the week, which I thought was a really cool event, and I really enjoyed playing it, and I know a lot of the players enjoyed playing it too. It was called H2O, and it is one round of pot limit hold'em, one round of pot limit deuce to 7 single draw, and one round of pot limit Omaha.
H2O, that's cute.
Yeah, isn't it?
It's like water.
Especially because our bar here at the pool is called HGO. So
that's cool.
It makes sense. But that was the first time, I believe, I played deuce to 7 outside of the home game. And maybe some of these crazy, you know, when we played at the Imperial Palace back in the day or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
But, and I've never played single draw pot limit with it. So that was a blast. And a couple of players I talked to said that was the reason they came down to play that, because they can never get to play that anywhere and they really enjoyed it. So that was a really cool event. And then, you know, one of our Antiup Cruise champions, Brenda Holdman, you know her, right?
Yes, of course.
She and her daughter came down and entered that first, and the first level, I see her pick up her purse and walk away. And I'm like, Brenda, you're not out already, are you? And she's like, yep. I'm like, wow, you're on the first level? 15,000 units?
Holy cow.
In a pot limit tournament? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, wow. So I'm like, that takes some effort, right?
Yeah.
And she re-entered, and they did an ICM chip chop, and she made about $3,000 on this tournament.
Holy cow.
Finished third.
That's awesome.
Isn't it?
That's crazy. I mean, the fact that she got knocked out, re-entered, and she got knocked out in such a weird, quick fashion like that, and then cashes, that's crazy.
Yeah, so that was the feel good story that I've noticed so far out here. But just a lesson to you folks: when you get knocked out, don't be sore. Buy some more. That's what our friend Elliot always says.
It rhymes. Oh, it's so cute.
All right. So also, and don't forget the Antiup Poker Tour event runs through July 3rd down here. You can go to antiupmagazine.com/goldennugget for all those details. And of course, we're tweeting out every day the schedule and day 2 chip stacks and winners as well too. So next time you're out here in Vegas for the summer, come out, pop down here and say hi to us.
Yes.
Now, across town, obviously, is this little tiny tournament called the World Series Poker going on. And obviously, the biggest tournament in the imagination of all poker players, the Colossus, happened. And we'll talk about that a little bit, too. But a couple other highlights that I'll just run through, unless you want to talk more about them.
No.
Robert Mizrachi won his 3rd bracelet, 2nd in 2 years. He won the Omaha 8 event. Actor James Woods made a final table in the shootout event. And Tuan Lee went back-to-back, first player to do that since 2009. Winning the 10K deuce to 7 bet.
So, in other words, he defended his title, is what you mean?
Defended
right?
His title,
right? He didn't win 2 titles in a row today this week.
Well, year. That's
oh,
true.
Okay, all right. So he defended his deuce to 7 title.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, he's pretty good at it. He should have been at the H2O event.
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on there?
Sure, he would have liked that $240 tournament after just winning that 10K buy-in event.
So you got to explain this Colossus news to me. There's some stuff going on that I need to hear about. I'm trying to figure out some of it, and I want to know what's going on. I had heard that the entries were like 23,000 something. Now the official number is 22,473. What happened there?
Yeah, obviously this is the talk of the town. And so all said and done, the official entries were 22,473. So just pause and think about that. That's amazing, right? 22,473 entries in this event. Now, the unofficial, the total number of entries was like over 25,000. But those folks, the actual number, the 22,473, comes after they voided or unregistered players that advanced. So kind of what happened here is you had four flights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you could enter each flight once. You couldn't re-enter the same flight twice.
Okay.
So, and because lines were going to be long, you know, a lot of these players decided to register for all four flights up front. And then if they got knocked out of the 1A, then they already had a ticket for 1B, didn't have to wait in line and get shut out. And so what happened was that, you know, in that scenario, let's say you moved on in 1A, obviously now you're not playing 1B, 1C, 1D, right?
Yeah.
So it took a while to get those players unregistered and stuff. So, you know, a couple complaints about this, which we'll talk about. But one of the ones that was probably more frustrating was new TDA rules are that you don't deal to dead stacks, right?
Right.
So there were lots of people talking about they were at a table with two of them, just two people. The other seats were sold to people. They weren't there. And presumably because they weren't coming ever after moving on, but they couldn't deal with the dead stacks. And now you have two people just going heads up at a table, and that's kind of frustrating.
Oh man!
One of the things that they do down here, the Nugget, is they don't start a table unless there's at least four people at it. So that might be something that the series does next year or looks into, because that's a quirk that I don't think anybody thought of, and they don't deal with the dead stacks rule, but. But yeah, so about 3,000 more people, so more than 25,000 actual entries, 22,000 official entries, and it turned out to be just shy of 15,000 unique players. And that was kind of the part of the game we had going on, people trying to guess how many unique players, because the biggest tournament before that was the Jamie Gold World Series, which was around 8,300, I think, or so.
Yeah.
So this almost doubled that event.
Jeez.
In terms of actual unique. And, of course, that event, you had to be unique, and the main event's always a one-entry freeze-out. So.
And all the thing about it, too, is if there was a little more crappy play, they'd have had over 25,000 entries.
Exactly, right?
That's crazy. Wow.
So anyhow, the prize pool ended up being just more than $11 million. First place winner from Texas, I believe it was, won $638,880. And it was so funny because in the Andia Poker Tour events, there were a lot of people that play Colossus. In fact, actually, in my H2O event, I think I might have been the only one at my table that didn't play it.
Oh, man.
And they all said that you could hear an audible groan through the entire Rio when they announced the prize payouts, because everybody was expecting first place to take home at least $1 million.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was interesting, and I talked to Lauren a little bit later. I don't know what this mythical $1 million mark means to people.
Right.
Obviously, you can complain about the structure if you want, but to say that first place should have been $1 million, just that's an arbitrary number out of the air, isn't it?
Yep. It's kind of like the mythical 1,000-yard rushing season means something.
Right.
Or the 100-yard game means something, because you can get 1,000 yards in a season if you just rush for 70 a game. So it's like same thing here. You know, $638,000 for a $500 investment. Oh, I don't want that. That's not good enough. Yeah, I think it is.
So, yeah. Now, what people were saying is first place was 5% of the prize pool. It's usually a bit bigger than that. The other thing people quickly figured out is Caesars raked about $1.2 million on this tournament. So they raked twice as much as the first place got.
Right.
You know, the other argument on the other side was the payout structure was a little flatter. So you have, again, entire city shut down with players here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playing in this big event, so if you can get more money in the hands of more people, the better the rest of the series, and really the best the rest of the city is going to be for the rest of the summer, correct?
Yeah, more money and more hands.
One way of looking at it, right? And really, the only guy that really can complain is the guy that won. And I'm sorry, if I won $638,000 in a $575 tournament, slap me if I'm complaining. Right?
Yeah, no, of course. That's what I was getting at. It's like, I am not going to complain. That's just crazy. It's a huge amount of money.
But the other thing, too, is just from a business standpoint, I mean, talk about – it's just kind of mind-boggling to think that the Caesars put together a tournament that made $1.2 million.
Yeah. Just
now, granted, it went on for 5 days, and you know, I had a ton of dealers and tables all over the place. And but a lot of that stuff was stuff they already had in place for the rest of the series, too, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
From a business perspective, I'm in awe. That's, you know, hands off, hats off, and clapping hands.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Now, obviously, as you can imagine, any poker tournament of this size, knowing that poker players like to bitch about stuff anyhow, there are a lot more bitching other than just the payouts. Lines were astronomically long. Long waits for payouts, too. Some people were waiting 2 or 3 hours to get their payouts. Apparently, they had a computer crash in the middle of it as well, too. People were allowed to come back later and pick up their winnings if they wanted to, which obviously is convenient if you're going to be in Vegas for a while. But if you're catching that plane home for work the next day, then you were forced to stick in that line and get that money and yeah. Get a computer back up. So, you know, some of that stuff, I think, is on the players, as it always is, right? I think the one thing the World Series always does very well with, particularly the main event, which usually has the longest lines, is strongly encouraging to pre-register.
Yeah, right.
You know, get there a couple days early, pre-register. They might even have online options, I'm not sure. But there were ways for people to avoid those lines, and people decided to come the day of and try to get in this tournament. And if you're going to do that, then I think... I mean, obviously, you can complain about whatever you want, but, you know, it's not like they can have 4,000 cashiers on hand for one event, right? And then right. Don't need them for the rest of the tournament. So, you know, I think players need to kind of do what they can to avoid those kind of complaints when there's stuff set up for them. But anyhow, I didn't make it over there. I just thought it was going to be a madhouse, but people told me all kinds of stuff, and then I saw pictures on Twitter, which I'm sure you did too. They actually had tables, Chris, in the poker kitchen. How exciting would that be to sit there?
Awesome.
And be, you know, that's where I'm playing in the poker kitchen today. I'm not in the you know Amazon room. I'm in the poker kitchen.
It's such a magical time. It's something I'll never forget as long as I live. Where are you playing? The poker kitchen.
Poker kitchen. So they packed in tables everywhere they could. One of our good friends who used to work with us at Cruises, Jason Boslow, is a floor here. I believe he broke 7,000 tables.
Wow.
And so, you know, you can imagine tables are just like breaking left and right because you only started 5,000 units, and most people were pretty aggressive knowing that they had up to 3 more bullets if they wanted to. So things were going pretty quickly.
Where do they keep all these tables?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just you need a casino just to hold all your tables when you're storing them. It's just crazy.
Absolutely.
7,000 tables, it's just ridiculous. That's amazing.
Yeah, they had a lot of great stats on the press releases and the number of unique chips that they actually had. I didn't write that on the show notes, so I don't remember. But it did a pretty good job of just making you feel in awe of this event.
Yeah.
So. Clearly, I think it was a success. You know, some players might complain that it wasn't, but they got a ton of people. They got a ton of pub for it. Obviously, first time trying it, so you know they're going to go back next year and try to work on some of these things that people didn't like. But I think we're going to see Colossus, you know, on the schedule from here on out.
Yeah, in perpetuity.
All right, so there's also obviously lots of other tournaments going on in Vegas this week as well, too. And then one story from one of them that everybody's talking about out here. A player at the Aria went to enter a $125 tournament. Instead was given a seat receipt for the $25,000 buy-in event. Decided to play it, knocked out some players before he was discovered and removed from the tournament.
How do you get discovered? There must be like some discrepancy in the prize pool or something. Yeah, and they backtrack,
you know,
I guess.
Careful talking about this because I don't think Aria has made a statement yet. So there's just a ton of rumors going on. And if folks want to go on the internet and chase down rumors and believe what you want to, you can. But I don't want to spread any on our show. But my understanding is that, you know, they're counting up the money and they were roughly 25,000 short.
Right.
And then how they backtracked and figure out who it was, I don't know. But obviously you have cameras and all that kind of stuff as well too, right? So and everything's computerized. So they figured it out somehow. But the guy, unfortunately, knocked a couple players out. So So it's interesting that the discussion going on here, because you know, some poker players are like, "What does this guy think he's going to do? You think he's going to win this thing?" And they were actually going to pay him.
Man,
which is probably a good point. But then the other thing too, I thought was kind of funny, is poker players always go to the negative first, right?
Uh-huh.
They're like, "Oh, this guy was just trying to screw with him, right?" And you know, and that's possible. Maybe you know, whatever. But I think another plausible explanation is, you know, hey, this guy paid $125, looked down, hey, I'm in a $25,000 tournament, right, where the best players in the world are playing. I'm never going to be able to play with them, right? I mean, even if you enter the main event, you're playing with amateurs for the most part, right?
Yeah.
There's very few amateurs plunking down $25,000 to play this. And I just imagine the whole, you know, Animal House thing with the little devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other one, right? You're going, you know what? I really should let them know that they gave me the wrong seat and get the right one. But the other's like, no, play it. Have fun. And, you know, it's plausible to me that the guy just decided, you know, hey, I'll play it. What, no harm, no foul. I'm not going to cash in it, right? And now I got a story to tell my buddies. And not realizing that it's probably pretty bad to do that.
Yeah. Do you think that ignorance is at all in play here? I mean, like I said, we don't want to spread rumors, but
right,
do you think that it's possible this guy didn't even know, or that there's no signage or whatever, and he just gets a ticket, looks down at the number, doesn't even realize he's playing in a $25,000 tournament? Is that possible?
Sure, yeah. It's probably less possible than the other ones, but it's possible, sure.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, $125 down the drain, but he's got a story for life. You know, but this, and how do you rectify the players that got knocked out? It also says a lot for the quality of play. You know, I mean, professionals obviously are going to get you in the long run, but a guy who normally plays a $125 tournament knocked out some players in a 25K event.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like the equivalent of me going on the French Open and knocking out Rafael Nadal. You know, hey, sorry, just for some reason could ace the ball a lot today. Sorry, buddy, you're knocked out. You know, what do you do then? You can't put him back in the tournament. It's just crazy. Wow, I wouldn't want to be in anyone's shoes there.
Yeah, definitely an interesting story, so I'm sure there'll be more coming out of that later on. And then we also did our little Ante Up Ambassador meetup. Almost a week ago now. Our Oklahoma Ambassador Robert Kelly helped us put this together. And it was a lot of fun. We did it at the Mirage, and that room is brand new, open now. Very nice-looking room. And invited a couple of the old All Vegas Poker players, All Vegas Poker group players
right.
So we had a lot of fun. So Rob came, Rob Solomon, our Las Vegas ambassador, Kitty Allman, our Southern California ambassador, and then Andrew, our Central Florida ambassador, got there late and got shut out. Played some cash games and had fun. And then we had a couple really fun people from the All Vegas Poker group that were a blast. And then one guy who was just walking by saw, hey, a 3-6 mix game up on the board and signed up for it and sat down. And a real nice guy, too. Once he found out that we're kind of a private group and one of our guys couldn't get in, he's like, oh, man, I'll give him my seat. And we're like, no, hey, you know, first come, first serve. You're sitting here. And nice guy. And he had a blast playing with us. But we played, you know, it was dealer's choice, and all kinds of crazy different games were in play. And my new favorite, and I'm definitely calling this the next home game, 3-2-1 Omaha.
Yeah, I played that at the IP.
Did you? Yeah, I don't remember playing it, but what a blast.
Yeah.
So it's normal Omaha, five cards, but you get three flops, two turns, and one river, and you can make your combination however you want off of those. And really a lot of fun, I thought.
Yeah, I remember when I first started, there was some major adjustment to play it at the IP because people were thinking straights were going to be good enough. And I was folding like baby flushes and stuff thinking. So, I mean, I think in our home game, it would be a lot more quality of play in that than what I faced. But when I did play it live, it took me some adjustment. I ended up crushing it. But it took a while to adjust against these guys. Once I saw two hands go to showdown, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna change here and adjust to this. But it's crazy to keep track of it because you still have to use one board, one turn, one river.
Right.
You know, you can't use like two boards, two turns. You know, I mean, so and then it was one overall high and one overall low, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So you really gotta concentrate and figure out what the low is on. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. The overall highest hand, and it's a lot of fun. But, yeah, you got to really pay attention. You can't just cruise your way through that game.
Yeah, because I mean, it takes away that, you know, hey, in Omaha A, if you have ace deuce and you're not counterfeited on the board, you've got the low, right? Here, you can get counterfeited, not just with cards. I mean, somebody could have a lower low on another board, depending how it works out. So you got to keep track of that. And then you're right. I mean, I would not go to showdown with anything less than the flush in that game.
Yeah, no way.
And if this board is paired at any point, then I'm not going to showdown with the flush either. Someone's got a boat.
Yeah.
It's just too easy. So, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, called a couple other games. Nothing too crazy. You know, we played a pineapple, played a couple of Razzes. I called the Doogie. But yeah, a little fun with our Anti-Up ambassadors. And all Vegas people were hilarious. So really look forward to that. And hopefully I can get something taken care of down here at the Nugget for us, for folks that come in out at the end of the month. And I'll let you know when I do that.
Sweet. All right, Annie updates. Don't forget, it's time to cast your ballot in Annie Up's most popular dealer contest. Go to AnnieUpMagazine.com/MPD and vote for up to 3 dealers in each of 5 regions. All voters are automatically entered into a drawing to win one of more than 400 prizes from our sponsors. Voting is open through July 8th, and iPhone users will need to enable cookies in order to vote. All right, we got our listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight someone who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. Comes from our good friend Zorag. He hasn't contributed to the show in a long time. It's
yeah.
Good thing to hear him come back. He says, what about a 3-day tournament where at the end of day one, any player with any chips can opt out for 50% of their buy-in back? The prize money removed from the tournament removes payout spots. The money doesn't come from the top.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of interesting. I think from a logistical standpoint is what I told him. I'm not sure casinos are going to want to get involved in doing as many payouts at the end of every night, but maybe they will. But then the other thing too is a 3-day tournament. There's not a ton of those around, really.
No, there's two. Yeah, if you're local, you're not going to get them anywhere.
Yeah, and you can't really do this scenario in a 1-day tournament, you know, where you do it after level 5 or something, because right. Now you're really slowing down the tournament, doing cash outs and stuff. But I don't know. It's interesting. You know, if you get to that point and you're pretty low on chips, you know, you'll take what you can get, right?
Can't be a guarantee tournament either.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We guarantee 1 million. Then, like an hour later, we guarantee 800,000. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's always hard to quantify these things for me. Like the quantum reload that the bike is famous for. I always wonder when the guy's like, on day 3, you could buy him for the full amount of 2,500, or on day, and it's like, how do they even come up with that number? They must have been some serious number crunching.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I always wonder what the edge is. Where's the edge? Is the edge doing it early and just hoping to have a great run, or the edge going in later and not having to worry about all that and less time stressed out over two or 3 days of play?
Yeah, I think the edge in that scenario is whatever your bankroll is, you know. You're better off getting in early and just exhausting yourself and playing essentially a $2,500 tournament for $100 or whatever it is, right?
Right.
But if you're, you know, Phil Ivey, you know, I can't imagine you're going to waste your time for 5 days when you can just buy it at the end and, you know, go after some big stacks. But I don't know, this is kind of interesting. And then you take out, so he's also talking about taking out payout spots, you know, so if, you know, if you take the 50%, and then you know, they're going to pay 27 spots. Now they're going to pay 26 spots, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I kind of wonder what the peer pressure is. I'm like, come on, Chris. You don't really want to come back tomorrow, do you?
It also kind of ticks off the players who – I mean, you got to know what it is going in, so I guess you're prepared for it. So,
right, exactly.
But
yeah.
Still, you're thinking, all right, they're going to pay 40 spots, and then – you're like, and then you're ahead of where it would be the necessary to cash out. So you don't want to cash out. But then they take away 40, you know, out of 40, they take away, you know, 15 spots. Now all of a sudden you're below average because all those chips aren't in play anymore. And you know what I mean? It's like, holy cow. Now,
yeah, but there's more money at the top now. That's the other way of looking at it too, right? So, you know, these guys you're taking instead of a min cash, which is usually 200% your buy-in. A lot of these players are taking 50%. So if there's more money at play in the tournament, you know, it's harder to get to that pay spot, but fewer players now that you have to worry about eliminating and more money left. So, I don't know. It's intriguing. You know, I think I kind of rained on his parade when he first sent it to me just because of the logistic part of it, but it could be interesting.
I'm not exactly sure I completely understand it either. So let's say, and I don't want to keep this too long, but so let's just say the buy-in was 100. That's toward the prize pool.
Right.
And you decide to cash out. You get 50 bucks back. The other 50 was still in the prize pool. So he's going from the bottom up. So the prize doesn't change on top. The money is still the same. Nothing changes. The only thing that changes is how many spots get paid, right?
Well, that's true, too. But if you're – well, yeah. I mean, I guess there's some math involved, too. If you have a bunch of people to take this
– it still goes from the bottom up.
Right, yeah. So, but still, people are taking 50% rather than
– right, but the money that's – I'm saying – so they'll take –
we're taking it than pay spots.
Let's say – pay spot last place was paying 110. Well, now it's paying 60. And, you know what I mean? That's how they're going to do it. And then the next one comes, and that place is eliminated. Then the next one only pays – 90 or 100 because it's in their 50 out of that. You know what I mean? So that's how they're gonna work it. I'm just saying, it seems to me as Zorag was envisioning, they would go from the bottom up and keep taking that money out of the bottom, but nothing on top changes. So as a person who is just well over chip stack average, who doesn't want to take that 50%, if a bunch of people do, now they're screwed because now they're like, well, damn, now I'm like at the bottom of the stacks, and if I get knocked out next, I'm going to get this crappy amount of money instead of, you know what I mean? So I think the people in the middle of the field are going to be ticked off in this kind of an event and may not enter because of it.
Interesting.
But it's still interesting. It's something to think about. At least people are always thinking about different kinds of tournaments that you can run to make it interesting for us or make it exciting or try to lure you there. But I don't know if that would work. I think too many people would be ticked off by what could happen to them in the middle of the field. That just seems like, you know, it's kind of like elections, you know. You got people in the middle are the ones that are the most people are, and those are the ones you don't want to piss off because they're the most votes, you know. I don't know. Very interesting. All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our good friend Dave Bloomberg. He says, the flop has been put out. There was a bet and then a raise. The dealer doesn't initially notice the raise and accidentally burns a card, and then catches the raise and stops before putting out the turn. The original bettor calls. Then the dealer burns again, but nobody notices, and he puts out what seems to be the turn. Both players check. The dealer is about to burn for the river, but then he has too many burn cards in front of him. This means the turn was wrong, and the card that was put out as the turn should have actually been the third burn card. He pulls out the accidental second burn and wants to put that up since it was the real turn. We call the floor, who says that since there were just two checks instead of any betting, action can restart on the real turn. So the dealer put out the real turn and went from there. What is the right ruling? Would the ruling have been different if there had been a bet on the incorrect turn?
Okay, Elliot says, the floor person mangled the call. He reasoned correctly, but applied the rule quite incorrectly. I gather that there were only two active players in this hand. While two players checking is not considered action, the dealer acting to burn a card becomes the third player checking the round, which seals the betting and the board for the purposes of substantial action. The correct ruling would have been just like golf on the PGA Tour. They were going to have to play the turn where it lies. Also, there is no, rather should not be, rerunning of betting rounds after action has taken place. That is just a descent into utter chaos. I am not averse to putting the actual river out there, but that is neither here nor there. Yeah, this gets back to the Destiny thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
At this point, you know, there's no exposed cards or anything like that. It's just, no one knows what that card was supposed to be. They just know that the card that's up there is not the one that should have been, right?
Yeah.
But really, does it change anything? No, it doesn't change anything, I don't think. So it seems the easiest thing to do is, since we have a turn now, play that turn, and then now we have a new river. I mean, I guess as Ellie says, at that point, you could actually put the actual river out, and that's probably good. It calms the nerves. But yeah, I don't see any reason to, you know, put a new card out and re-bet. That's weird.
The only person who complains now is the one who loses. because the one who won's like, oh, no, Destiny, what's card Destiny? We didn't see the other card. So isn't it funny how Destiny continues to come up in the call to floor, though? And, you know, and I've gotten way past it.
It's selective Destiny, right?
But it is select. It is.
The loser's going to say, wow, that wasn't the right card, so you really shouldn't have won.
Right,
which
yeah.
he or she cannot really say that, right? Because we don't know what the real cards were, right? So.
Right.
Although in this scenario, I guess we know what one was, and they took that back and put a different one there. So,
yeah,
it's probably all the reason not to do it, because now you've exposed more information that people can complain about, right?
Yeah.
But other than that, it's, you know, I mean, I'm not talking that we should go descend all the way into just throwing a dart at a dartboard to pick cards. But really, if they're shuffled and no one sees them, we should be doing it correctly, but, you know, if something happens and nothing is exposed, then, you know, card is a card, folks.
Yeah, you're betting on what's showing, not what you think was going to come, because you have no idea what was going to come, so
right, exactly.
Why do you care? One thing I want to say, and this gets to the broader sense of poker rules, is if it's a cash game and these kind of things are happening, they should have the TDA for tournaments, and they should have, like, Robert's rules at the ready at all times, and no matter what you do, don't do it off the top of your head. If you're a four person, take your time and figure it out. It's a cash game. I know you don't want to hold up business for too long, and I know four people need to go over there and if they know the answer, but if they don't know the answer, don't just wing it. You know what I mean? Say, all right, look, guys, you want me to get this right, or do you want me to just tell you what I think? Because if I'm gonna get it right, I'm gonna get Robert's rules out, or we're gonna have an official rules for cash games or something. In the vault of the casino or something, and get it right, you know. So
well,
many times
these rules, we don't know here whether this is a tournament or not.
Right? No, that's what I'm saying. That's why I said in a broader sense. If it was tournament, then it's TDA rules, and you get the TDA out, whatever. But if it's a cash game, take your time and get it right. You know, you're just gonna piss people off if you don't.
Yeah, I will say in this scenario, I know Elliot says the four person mangled to call, but mangled's probably a strong word because. It's a plausible solution. It's not the one I would do, obviously not the one LA would do, but I don't think it wronged anyone, where sometimes I see decisions that actually wrong someone, right? So
right, because the card's not exposed or anything, so there's really no wrong thing here. It's just not the way it's been practiced or done or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, because you can argue now that you're putting out both players check, now you can put out the actual real turn card, and then you could pretend like that other card didn't exist and the checks didn't exist, and obviously it's going to change the action now, but at least you could defend it by saying, hey, I was just trying to put the actual right card out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think you also defend it the other way too and say, hey, come on guys, a card's a card, so you guys already acted on that card, now we're going to put out what is supposed to be the real river card, and all is well.
Right. All right. Well,
I'll tell you the other thing, though, that's it's constant out here, constant, is levels not going up until the TD announces it. I mean, it's just amazing. I just talked about this on the show last week. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like 17 times a day. Have they announced it? Well, they haven't announced it yet. And then a couple of people are like, why is the man of they announced it? I'm like, that's what I've been saying. So, I got a good email from one of our listeners that said he loves me like a brother, Chris, but could not disagree with me more on this. So definitely a contentious thing, but I'm going to stand my ground. I'm going to say, you know, hey, if we got a clock there and somebody at the table sees the clock, then levels up, buddy.
Hey, we got a new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're in a 40-person multi-table sit-and-go with a buy-in of $50. The action was crazy in the beginning of the tournament, but has since calmed down near the end. We've just started the final table of 9 players. The average is 12 big blinds, but stacks range from 6 big blinds all the way up to our 40 big blinds. We are the chip leader. The blinds post, and it's folded around to the cutoff who shoves. This player is a pretty solid player, has played tight most of the night, but knows when to make a move. He sits with 15 big blinds, just above average. The button checks his cards and waits for a while before shoving his remaining stack into the center. He's the second big stack at the table, with 25 big blinds. This player is also what I would classify as solid. He's good at playing situations and players, and reads very well. the small blind folds, and we look down at the queen of spades, queen of diamonds. If we call and lose this pot, we are down to just above average in chips. If we call and win, we are a massive chip leader. Additionally, the top six get paid out, so that will put us to within one of the money. So, is he overshoving to isolate?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home of the Antiup group discussions. This comes from Steve in Pennsylvania. And it's a situation.
Oh, okay. Good. Then I don't have to really go crazy writing it down or anything, right?
Right, right. All right. Seems like a complicated situation now I'm looking at it, but we'll go ahead and read through it, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
All right. So he's playing at a Maryland casino here. $350 buy-in. Black chip bounty. So you knock a player out, you get $100 or a black chip. 30,000 guaranteed tournament. Starting specs for 25K. Levels of 30 minutes for the first 8. Then they go to 40 minutes. 197 entries, and first place was over 13K.
All right.
We're in the third level. Blinds are 100, 200, 10-handed table. And he says the table is made up of typical amateur players, several older gentlemen, and several middle-aged folks, including myself. Villain 1 is a middle-aged player who has been running well and playing quite a few hands. He appears solid and hasn't gotten too out of line. His stack is around 50,000. Villain 2 is younger, appears less experienced, and has been playing aggressive, often with poor starting hands. He's also been active, and he's down to about 18K. Villain 1 is under the gun, plus 3, and Villain 2 is MP1. He actually folds a Villain 1 and raises a 600. Villain 2 calls a 600, folds around to us on the button. We have 30K in chips, and look down at Ace of Spades, Ace of Clubs, re-raised to 2,200, and both villains call. Flop comes King of Hearts, 7 of Hearts, Jack of Diamonds. Villain 1 bets 3,000. Villain 2 thinks for a minute and then shoves his 18K in the middle all in. What do we do?
Oh, man. I think one of them's on a draw. I can't imagine we're behind a set of... Especially since we raise, it seems like with this many people in, if you were at a set, you would want to check and let someone's going to bet here. And I know check raising is, you know, sort of a ABC amateur kind of move, but in this case, with two people in the hand with me, and there was a raise pre-flop from that guy, and then a call, and then we re-raised, and they still called, I feel like one could be on, like, a nut draw, and the other could have, like, ace-king. So... I'm not folding. I've seen guys fold because they're nervous or whatever. I enter tournaments to play them optimally and to get big stacks early and to cruise from there. So I just don't see myself folding here. You got to figure there was 6,600 in the pot to start. One guy bets 1,000, that's 7,600. Then a guy puts 18,000 out. You know, so you're looking at like 26,000 out there. I have aces, an overpair to the board. I can't let it go. I can't. I just can't. I'm going to call.
Huh.
I'm only behind a set, or maybe two pair, but I doubt a guy's got King-Jack with the raise and the call and the re-raise. And the, you know what I mean? King-Jack is a horrible hand. So anybody raising pre-flop is not raising with King-Jack, I don't think. And then in the position they were in. And then the call or re-raise like that with King-Jack, I doubt it. So it has to be a set of jacks, set of sevens, or set of kings, and... I just don't think we're behind that. I think it's like ace king, and it's like, you know, a flush heart draw or something. Or a straight draw maybe. But what heart? So it seems like it'd be an ace of hearts, and like ten of hearts or something like that. You know, or even ace jack of hearts with a pair of jacks, and then a flush draw and an overcard. I just can't let the aces go here. I remember watching an episode, and it was a cash game, but high stakes poker, and it was Eli. And, you know, and it might have been Sammy Farhan, like one other guy. And he waited forever for the aces. And Eli got the aces. And he went raise, call, and then he went crazy with a raise. And they all called him. And then it came out, same kind of board like this, where it was like a king, a 10, and like a 4 or something, two suits. And he got a bet. and you got to raise all in, and it gets to Eli, and he's like, how am I going to do? How am I going to fold these? I just got them. I'm waiting all day for them. You know what I mean? And it's all raise pre-flop. What? These guys could have anything at this point. I'm not going to let it go. Now, it's a cash game, so and it was $100,000. You know what I mean? I realize it's nothing to these guys. He's got 47 businesses on the Vegas Strip, and he's a billionaire or whatever. But still, it just seems to me in this situation, I just can't let it go. I can't remember. Do we have them covered?
No.
No. So it'll be our tournament. Could be our tournament. Villain
50K. Oh. We have the villain two that's moved all in. We have covered.
All right. So I think I'll call. I really do. I think I'm calling. I realize there's some end game here that I'm missing out on and whatever. But it just, yeah. I'm so tired of folding because it's hand of the week and situation of the week, and you know, you wait 7 months.
Call is not your money, right?
Yeah, you wait 7 months for a hand of the week to have aces. You're gonna call when you have them. It was a little more. I guess it's really coordinated, and that's generally what you do is you fold. You know, I guess if I'm being really, really good, I might let it go. I just feel like we're ahead here. I don't know why, and it feels silly to say that because I don't really know anything about any of this other than what you rattled off in 46 seconds. So, but I'm just not letting him go in this hand of the week. And if I'm wrong, I've been wrong before.
Yeah, I got to say, I know I've got a reputation for folding like a cheap tent, but I don't like anything about this situation. We got a pre-flop, we had a raise, a call, and then we made a substantial re-raise, right? And then this flop comes out, and neither of our opponents give a crap about us, right?
Right.
First one bets 3K in, and the second one shoves. So unless we've given them a reputation that, you know, we raise big and fold all the time, then somebody's got to have something here, right? I think. Now, you know, the villain two is when the guy that's been described as kind of a less experienced playing aggressive, poor starting hand. So perhaps he's got junk here. I doubt it. He's probably got a piece of this at least. If he has a piece of it, then we have him beat right now. But I'm more worried about the next guy. The next guy has me covered. Yeah. And he's bet right into this and seems a more solid player. And I just can't see him betting into this without something. And I don't know what it is exactly. You know, I would like to think if it's kings, he might have, you know, raised us again pre-flop. But it could be jacks. Jacks would not have re-raised us, right? And somebody might have a hard draw. I don't know. I have a feeling that if we come along, villain one's going to come along. Now we put our tournament life on the line because he's got us covered. And we've got to fade two hands. Both of them have to have something here, even if we're ahead of both of them right now.
Are you, in this situation, if you hit set of jacks, because to me, I got to rule out king-king here, just because, like you said, pre-flop.
Right.
Yeah. And even if he had king king and he hits a set of kings top set, is he really betting out into us when we made the 3x raise? Actually,
but remember, there are two hearts on the board and a king jack.
Right, I understand that. I'm just trying to figure out, do we really need to protect? We know a bet's coming, so do we just check and let him bet and then we put the hammer down?
That's true. You know, maybe it's a bet to set the price. You know.
Yeah, I think that we need. I think we need to call here. I think we're ahead, and I'm not going to be terribly worried about the under the gun plus three just because he could be doing anything. All right, so if you think about the preflop raises, all right, could he have king jack? I don't know. And then he's going to call our quadruple raise of his raise. I don't know about that with king jack. So let's narrow that out. The guy in the middle, I'm not even thinking about because I have him covered anyway, so whatever. So, but the other guy, the only thing that makes hands that's ahead of us. The only hands that make sense, really, are jack-jack. Even 7-7, he may even let 7-7 go for 2,200 or whatever.
Yeah, probably.
But maybe not. Maybe he's got enough chips to set mine, and then he's
got
it.
Again, whole, you know, call, if you have it, the call is 10% of your stack, and then the 2,200, actually, it was less than that. Yeah. After it's 600, so 1,600, you know, he could have called with 7-7.
Oh, yeah. So, now, do you bet into somebody with 7-7? or you know it's coming.
We've got a set, but the board's pretty coordinated. We got two hearts and we got a king jack, which good connect. I mean, although it's hard to put anybody on really
queen ten,
either queen ten or something like that, that might hit this straight. But yeah, I could see you looking at those two hearts and like, you know, hey, you know, and maybe even hoping that by betting out you're going to get raised and get more money in. You know,
yeah, I'm going to get it in thinking on my head. And that's what I always want to do, is I always want to get my money in ahead. In Omaha, it's one thing you don't want to, because you got all these redraws. But in this game, I want to be ahead, and I think I am. And I'm going to call this all in.
Okay. And then before we reveal, our hero also wants to know whether the $100 bounty substantially changes our thinking here.
No, if anything, it makes me want to call more, because I can get this middle guy out who's probably on a draw.
Well, I think that's what he meant, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm already calling, but it doesn't change it for me that I'm already calling, but it just makes me feel even better.
Yeah, I see. I don't think the bounty really... I'm more worried about villain one, and we're not going to get a bounty from him. He's going to get a bounty from us.
He's going to get two bounties if he wins.
You know, if I felt confident the villain one was going to fold here, absolutely, I'd call in a minute, and I'd risk it, you know, half my stack or whatever, you know, on this guy that usually has poor starting hands. But right. The fact that villain one is still in and bet into us is the whole reason that I'm a little spooked here,
right?
And I can't get a bounty from him, so that doesn't change my thinking at all.
Okay.
All right, so this is what our hero says. He says, after villain two shoved a stack in, I was thinking his most likely holdings were ace king, king queen, king jack, jack jack, 7-7, or two big hearts like ace queen. I thought the least likely these was ace king, as I'm holding two aces, and I think you would have re-raised villain one with it. However, given those options, the only ones I'd like to see are ace king or king queen. Even if he's just on a hard draw, I'm at best in a coin flip situation. If I'm wrong here, I lose more than half my stack. In addition, there's the matter of villain one still to act, who has me covered. I thought I was ahead of him. However, he has enough chips to take me out if I was wrong. Thought about this for a minute or two, and then folded the aces, deciding that I wasn't going to overplay this pair, and I would look for a better spot. Villain one folded, and villain two mucked his cards. My friends, upon hearing this hand, all thought I made an error, and they would have called or shoved, especially given the bounty. I wasn't thinking about the bounty at this stage of the tournament, as I was far more concerned with booting my stack. Am I being too cautious?
Well, Scott would say no.
No.
I would say no.
The bounty doesn't come into play.
Right, I would say no, too. I would say you're not being too cautious. I'm just tired of folding in hand of the week. That's what I'm doing. I'm calling. I mean, it just seems to me, the way I rationed it was, I felt like the first villain, yeah, he bet into us, but he could have been thinking we missed or that we had queens and he's trying to represent the king. Then when he got the shove, he's like, all right, my ruse is up. I don't have anything. The guy is shoving. I mean, he could have had anything. He could have had any ace of hearts suited, you know, because he was a crazy player and didn't really understand quality starting hands or whatever situation. So I feel like we were ahead. And, you know, whatever. I wouldn't regret the fold. You know, wouldn't regret it. I'd move on and say it was one hand, one race.
Right?
Yeah, you're still in the tournament. It was only $2,200 it cost you.
And you got it, yeah. You got a ton of chips.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So there's no regret there. It's, I will say this about the bounties. I do see this often in bounty tournaments. I'm starting to play more of them now just because they're on the schedules of any up tour events.
Right.
People kind of lose their mind going after bounties.
Lose their mind.
They really do. They're like, oh, that's $25 or $50 or $100 or whatever it is, and they make really loose calls. And I'm not in these tournaments to collect a couple bounties. I'm in this tournament to win this thing. That's where the money is. Now, obviously, if I'm in a good spot, you know, yeah, I want to take down as many people as possible, and I could free roll on the tournament with that. But this is a scenario where I think if somebody's like, oh, I got to call because there's bounties, that's pretty crazy, I think. Because you're potentially putting your whole tournament on the line here.
Right, I agree. What I agree with is
$100, because you're not going to pick up the $100 from the guy that has you covered, right?
Right. You don't alter your playing or your plan or your attack or whatever based on, hey, I'm gonna go against the norm here because I can try to win $100 now. That's not right, because then you're losing your ability to win $6,000 that day, you know, and you're putting yourself at risk. It's not a The ROI is not there for me, but if it's like, okay, a third of my stack and I'm heads up with this guy and it's not really going to hurt me because I would do this in a tournament situation anyway without the bounty being affected, then yeah, I would do it. But to just put my whole tournament at risk for the bounty, no, I would not do that. That is wrong. That's just silly. That's the, what is it, you're making pennies to lose dollars or whatever the hell. You know, that's just silly. So, I don't know that saying, but it makes sense. So
missing the dollars by focusing on the nickels.
Yeah, there you go. Missing the dollars by focusing on nickels. Don't do that. Bounties should be called nickels. But I do have to say, I can see how people can get addicted to them, like, you know, like,
oh yeah, absolutely,
candy or something. You know, we used to go down to the One Eye Jack's a lot when right. Sam was working there to go see him and talk to him business stuff, and he'd always, you know, hey, this is a bounty tournament, you should get in, blah blah blah, and we get in the tournament, and then I'm like, oh, it's a bounty, and they're like, yeah, I'm like, eh. And all of a sudden they start throwing these red chips at you when you're not going to go out. And you start looking at him, and you're like, that's real money. That's my money. All of a sudden, my buy-in's paid for already, and I'm still at the first table. I'm free-rolling in this tournament. You know, all of a sudden, you start to feel addicted to them, and now you want to try to knock people out. And so I can see some people falling for the guise of it as being a great thing. You know, it is a cool feeling when you're knocking someone out. And you just a little while ago experienced that.
Right.
That double
buy-in. That's a different. That progressive bounty changes it, because now when you're looking over there and you're making two or three times your buy-in by knocking a guy out, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But this is a black chip bounty, so you're getting $100 from everybody you knock out, whether level 1 or level 30.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you paid $350 to get in this tournament. So, you know, I'm not going to be considered a successful tournament if I get one bounty and go home down $250.
But I got the bounty. I have this beautiful black chip. Yeah, well, you lost your chance at $6,000, buddy. So
yeah.
Don't let that cloud your judgment. But in this situation, it would have just made me happier. I was still calling, so it didn't matter. So, but it would have made me happier to knock the guy out and get the $100 too. So it was a fringe benefit to bounties. That's how I look at them. I'm not going to let them affect my tournament play. I'm just going to say it's a bonus. It's a fringe benefit. So, hey, another good show. And next week's our last show before our 10-year anniversary, right?
That's right.
Very exciting.
Last one of them out here in Vegas, and then we'll have some fun with that 10th anniversary. So if you're out here in Vegas the next week or so, or at the end of the month when I'm out here, come down and say hi at the NBA Poker Tour.
Awesome. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Love.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.